Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we are discussing the highlights of the 50th anniversary of San Diego Comic-Con, including Marvel's Phase 4, Westworld Season 3, The Witcher, Watchmen, and even a report direct from the event. Let's get on with the show! Is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hoes, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, I am excited about Comic-Con!
Ho! Weren't you just saying like 5 minutes ago you were overwhelmed?
Yeah, I'm faking everything right now. So I was being real with you a couple minutes ago when the people couldn't hear me, but now, because we're here on the show, what's going on, Aaron?
Okay, I like it, kinda.
Isn't that what you want?
You need to get 50% of this. You need to get 50% between normal John and whatever the hell this is. And then you meet that happy middle, and I think you're golden.
You know what, man? I just spent the whole cruise with you. You were like, you know, John is really sad, but on the show, he sounds really sad. In person, he's actually this happy-go-lucky guy. And now that I am, like, overcorrecting to the happy-go-lucky guy side, you're like, why don't you punch it back a little bit there, big guy?
Maybe I'm just never happy.
I guess that's it. I'm going to go with that.
We're a couple. Amanda Sink is here.
Hello, hello. I don't have as much enthusiasm as Johnny does.
Normally you do.
Well, I mean,
now you're bringing it down. Are you trying to be him now? I don't know what's going on. This is like reverse day. I don't like
it. Yeah, reverse day?
It's opposite day.
Yeah, she dove on that Marvel bomb and for me. And all of a sudden, she's like me going, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah, pretty much. All I wanted was one thing, and here we are with everything.
Well, you wanted Marvel. And guess what? They wouldn't stop talking. All right, so Comic-Con kicked off with the latest It Chapter 2 trailer, and we were flooded with details of various shows and movies after that. Obviously, we're not focused on the comics themselves. I'm not even sure if that's a priority anymore. But this was their 50th anniversary. So here's a quick little fun fact. The massive event, which started in 1970, so I don't understand how we got to 50, because it's 2019, but whatever. I guess. Yeah.
That's nerd math.
Yeah, nerd math. It was a gathering of about 145 comic fans in a hotel basement. And that's blown up into one of the world's most highly anticipated celebrations of geek culture. It now attracts, this is for people that don't even know what it is, more than 130,000 attendees to the San Diego Convention Center and that local gas lamp quarter district. And apparently, any hotel or anything within reach is also part of it. I mean, I've been to Comic-Con. It is an overwhelming experience. It ran from July 18th to 21st this year. You will literally see Batman and Superman having a cupcake with My Little Pony and then a dude in a suit right next to him. It's like the weirdest combination of wonderful people. It's actually a great time most of the time.
You know what? Maybe it was because for a little while there, it was multiple times a year they ran the con.
No, I think it's if you do the math, if you start in 1970 and then, you know, you actually get to 10 at the 9 and then you start over. So you actually get to 10 at the 9 because you started in 70.
Because you have to count the 70.
Because you count the 70. The math works, man. These are nerds. These are our people. They know how to count. Well, they're not your people, obviously, but there are people. Man and I understand.
I just trust them. That's all.
They all put right. It on the banner. It's got to be true.
Well, you're the one that was questioning whether or not they. how do they do 50 years? I don't know, man. You're messing with my head.
I am all over the map. Okay, so here's how we do it. If you've never listened to one of these episodes, what we do is we break everything into our own panels, because when you go to Comic-Con, there's lots of panels. So we have Amanda's panel, we have John's panel, we have my panel. We're each covering different things from the convention, things that stuck out to us, highlights, if you will. It's not going to be everything. We didn't cover Riverdale and Arrow's final.
We basically didn't cover CW. We cover everything else.
Right.
Yeah. F those guys.
You used to worship those guys. Shut up.
And then, I don't know about worship. Come on.
Worship. You really all you want to talk about every year was the Arrowverse. And now all of a sudden you're like, I'm done with them.
Every year. I've only been here for like two of these.
You've
maybe
been here
one.
Three. This is your third.
I wasn't here last year. I actually checked the
right.
tape.
That's
I
right.
wasn't here last year. Because last year, Amanda came in and said, hey, you know what? The year before, Johnny was actually going to be right about Shazam, and all you guys gave him a hard time about Shazam. And look at that! Johnny was right about Shazam! God damn it, I was right about something!
You were super right about Shazam. Hey, I love that movie.
There are people driving.
You just broke stereos.
Right now. that someone probably just careened off a cliff. And it might be because of what you just did. I want you to think about that.
I want you to think about the fact that you guys have driven me to this.
I feel worse for the people who have headphones inside their ears and had that happen.
What? Aaron will equalize it all out.
Yeah, I can take. Yeah, I can equalize can that out. I can get rid of crazy man yelling at the microphone. Yeah, I can do that.
He's got magic fingers, apparently.
Well, that's true, man. We don't want to talk about that. Let's get into
your voice changed.
Your voice changed.
Let's get into your panel, and I do want to say, because it's not part of our panel, because we already talked about Veronica Mars last week, but they did announce pretty coolly that the Veronica Mars direct-to-Hulu series was going to drop a week early at the con, which was a very cool effect.
Yeah, for the most part, except for all the people who, like, scheduled to take off work on the 26th, all the people who still didn't have the show yet internationally.
Can't you kind of, like, call your boss and just be like, reschedule?
In the middle of the day?
Well, you probably got some things done. I'm sure. Whatever. Let's get to your panel. What do we want to talk about from Comic-Con? I remember we were each fielding something. We're going to have a field reporter. We're going to have Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net. We're going to pop him in here right after Amanda. So, Mandy, take it away.
So, the first one we have is the Watchmen trailer was dropped. And that is HBO's entrance to working with superheroes in their own take on The Watchmen. It's at the helm of Damon Lindelof, and it's a modernized adaptation set 10 years after the original books took place. And Dr. Manhattan is apparently a thing. So everybody's super excited about that. I don't know. Can I swear? Because there's a quote.
Sure.
Dr. Manhattan lives on fucking Mars.
Yeah, it's in the trailer.
That's how they introduce that there's a hint that this may fit into the timeline of the original.
Well, they also show there's also a tiny little speck of an image of him in like a crater someplace on Earth.
Do they show a shadow of the blue dong from the movie?
Well, I mean, you can't miss that shadow, the blue dong.
It's half of his character.
I'm going to be real.
Did you not see the original Watchmen?
I have tried probably 5 times to get through that movie and I fall asleep every time.
Apparently you didn't try hard enough.
Ha! The blue dong. See? There's a connection.
Oh boy. You're really reaching. Get your eggplant emoji out of here.
Sorry.
I mean, he's really reaching. That dong is not reaching for much.
Oh my God.
It's dragging. You get it? It's dragging.
Yikes. Well, I just, for whatever reason, I wanted to watch the movie. I wanted to enjoy it, and I just couldn't get myself into it. Maybe I just need to do it now or something.
No, it's a love it or hate it kind of movie.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, the movie is fine. You don't have to I don't think you have to watch it to enjoy this show. It looks like it's probably going to follow the books more than the movie.
Yeah.
So you're probably better off just reading the comic.
Well, yeah, and it's set 10 years after the book, so it's obviously going to take some of that information and use it to propel the story. But when I watched the trailer, it just looked great. I was immediately interested.
What about it, since you didn't watch the movie, what about the trailer appealed to you?
The super badass chick who just looks super cool and ominous and like she's about to do some destruction.
That's it?
That was my immediate thing that sold me. I was like, wow, she looks real cool.
Oh,
like, I want to hang out with her. Mm. Maybe not too closely because she might kill me. I don't know. But that's what made me want to continue watching the trailer. And I was like, this seems like it might be actually kind of interesting. But I'm not super familiar with the world, and it made me want to go back to try to watch this movie again just
for like the 8th time.
Yeah.
I can't wait to fall asleep again.
Wait a second. You were giving John crap for his math. How did you get from 5 to 8 with 1?
I wasn't really listening when you said it the first time.
That's of course you weren't.
No, I was kind of like when's John going to talk?
Wait, what?
I'm just kidding.
So that's my first one. Are you guys super excited for Watchmen, the TV show?
I actually enjoyed the movie. I did say before, I don't know how much this is going to involve the movie. I guess the story with the movie and the book is pretty close. But, you know, the trailer itself has me interested. I don't know if it's interested enough to make me want to keep my HBO subscription, but I might check it out.
Really? You're thinking about canceling it because there's no more Thrones or what?
Oh, well, I don't watch Westworld, and the only other thing I would watch, yeah, I know. The only other thing I would watch on Game of Thrones television.
It's not HBO anymore.
It's not HBO anymore. It are some of the crime docs.
Big Little Lies?
I don't do Big Little Lies. So my wife does, but I don't do it. Actually, you know, and when I get to my panel, there's something else that'll make me want to keep my subscription at least a little while longer. So we'll talk about that then.
Well, since you bring up Game, oh wait, well, I guess
do
you get
I
to
get
talk.
An opinion on this TV show?
I was just
show?
So excited. John gets to talk, and then I wanted to move on.
I respect that. Okay, so I love the movie. Love the movie. Love this trailer. Don't love Damon Lindelof. He is a guy who can never finish anything correctly.
Oh,
Prometheus,
boy.
Bad ending. Lost, I think it's pretty obvious how I feel about that ending. Sucks. Or half sucks. Sorry, the character's got a great ending. The island, not so much. The island's still sitting there going, when do I get an ending? He's a guy who comes up with great ideas and doesn't do the follow through. He doesn't work out how to resolve them. So everything here looks great. I'm concerned about the long-term prospect. I'm afraid it's going to be another one of those shows where I get hooked on it, and then I'm just going to be left wanting to find Lindelof and send him a nasty tweet. That's what we do now. We send nasty tweets, and we tell him, well, I'm never watching anything you do again, and then we end up watching whatever they do again.
Mm, that is true.
That just makes you a liar.
Yep. There's your little tie-in to Game of Thrones right there.
Well, I was going to get there. That's why I started talking before you. Speaking of Game of Thrones.
All right.
Well, Seth Rogen has had some backlash recently because at the Game of Thrones panel where the creators D.B. Weiss and David Benioff, is that how you say his name? They pulled out of their own Q&A, which I kind of think is a little bit funny, and that they put Seth Rogen in as a replacement.
Never pull out.
They didn't really put Seth Rogen in for a replacement. It happened at Seth Rogen's panel.
Oh, that he was talking about it?
Yes.
Oh, my mishap. I read this. I read...
Oh.
You... Apparently not.
This is literally your...
I didn't pick this one.
I realize that, but it was assigned.
And I read it.
I don't think you did.
I did. I did.
I 100% don't think you did, because he was at the preacher panel. I got that from reading it.
What?
Read the same article.
No, I Googled mine.
Okay. Did you Google incorrectly?
You gave it a wrong Goog.
Anyway, can I finish this?
Do you want me to handle this one? Because I actually know what happened.
Well, I have quotes.
That's cool, but you haven't even explained the scenario yet correctly.
Well, you haven't even let me go.
John.
Okay, let it go. Let's see how this happens. Okay. Let's see how
you
let's
know
see
what?
How
I'm just going to sit back and let the magic
so
work.
So at the other panel
the
that
audience
Seth Rogen
can vote.
Was at, he was addressing...
Not the other one, the only one. He wasn't at Game of Thrones. He might have been in the audience. I have no idea, but that's
let
not...
Let me finish talking. Shh.
I just can't.
Shh. Then go.
Millennials.
I'm not a millennial.
You want to be.
Okay. So Rogen was addressing the absence of those two gents who pulled out of their own because of quote unquote scheduling issues. And he had said, I do just want to start by saying, I know we're following the Game of Thrones panel. I guess I should have read this better.
You mean like the
oh
first sentence?
Well, it makes sense now, which is a nightmare, just objectively. I also know that their showrunners didn't show up because they didn't want to answer questions about the show. So I just want to say that I'm not one of the creators of Game of Thrones, but I am the creator of other TV shows. So feel free to ask me any Game of Thrones questions you might have throughout the night. I'm not an expert. I haven't read the books, but I've watched the show so I can give insight into my thoughts. And he went to go on and saying that he's willing to show his face, which is a huge jab at the creators who did not show up to their panel. And he's saying, hey, I showed up. So that's kind of a good sign, but I'm willing to show my face. How about you guys?
I'm saying that's a dick move.
On Rogan's part?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a dick move on Rogan's part because Rogan hasn't had the... Rogan, he gets a lot of love on the internet because he's a massive pothead and because he puts out stuff that people like and it's not very controversial in any way and doesn't push a lot of envelopes with the exception of like the pot and dick joke envelope. He gets away with a lot of stuff that he wants to do and that's fine. But for some other creator who spent it's been 3 months since the end of Game of Thrones and these guys have probably been berated on the internet left and right and up and down and sideways on the street, like, and probably in person too, as why would they want to put themselves in the line of fire some more? So I would say that they have a right to decide I don't need to be a part of that.
Yeah, as much as I think it's funny, because I did laugh when I read it.
Oh, so you didn't even watch it?
No, I didn't need to because it actually said in the article what happened.
Yeah, but you were giving me crap for not watching.
No, I didn't. I watched the entire Game of Thrones panel.
for not reading.
Whatever, Johnny. Whose side are you really on here?
The facts.
Neither.
Apparently.
I hate you both.
Anyway. No, I forgot what my freaking point was. But the Game of Thrones panel, which was a great panel for the most part, it got a little awkward because they started with a... I've never seen this before, but the panel actually started with a, hey, please remember to be nice, basically. Which is just weird, because it's gotten so much backlash, and they were just trying to, I guess, get buffer it before it started. I think that's the wrong way to talk to fans. Just, you know, have a Q&A or don't have a Q&A, whatever, but don't, like, give a lecture about how to be nice or not be nice. People don't respond well to this. And Rogan, kind of to what John's point was, he took a direct jab at a creator when his show hasn't finished and it's on its end run, but he has no concept of what that person went through or what those guys went through and what they've gone through bringing this thing to a head. He doesn't know their personal lives, and he is a creator, so he should know better and have at least a little bit more respect. I know he's doing that because it plays to his base, and it's kind of like saying, because I thought it was hysterical, and I'm probably part of his base, except I don't do pot, but everything else about him I find pretty funny. And I get he's doing that thing like, hey, I'm one of you guys, but that's a real tacky way to do it. And as it sat, I thought, like, you know, Rogan, that was kind of a really cheap shot when you weren't even part of it. You don't know anything about what they went through. So it's kind of their whole panel. I feel like just was in just covered in a cloud of negativity through no fault of their own, really.
Well, I definitely laughed at the joke.
I thought it was funny, but then I thought about it, and actually John made me think about it more. It's just a bad thing to do as a creator. Like, it would be if somebody's taking pop shots at the podcast, you know? It's like, you put a lot of work into it. I don't care. Not every week's going to be golden, but because you don't like something and you take shots at the creator, you don't know what they went through.
Here's the thing, though. Here's where I'm at, because I sit on both sides of this. I understand that he has a responsibility as a creator and a fellow artist in making... entertainment is an art. He has a responsibility to try to maintain that level of respect among those people and try to disencourage people from attacking them even further. On the other hand, if you pull out last minute of a panel that people have been anticipating going to see, those are the people that likely want to be there for you. Maybe they have feelings. You don't know what how they're going to react, but now you just shit all over all of the fans who have been supporting you, and even if there are some that don't support, you didn't even give it a shot to see how it would go. You just said, hey, last minute, not going to be there. And to me, that's disrespectful to your fans.
Yeah, I'm going to have to split the hair with you on this one, because at the actual event, when there were moments of awkwardness, there were moments of, I believe, they're being booed,
yep,
the people
being
who
booed.
Did showed up. So... whether or not they showed up is immaterial. They were right.
Right, but still fair. At the same time, they didn't even try to make the effort to be there. It's not like they got there and they said, you know, if this is going to be a super negative panel, like we want to pull out. We want to be able to just say, nah. And instead, they waited till the last minute. They didn't do it after all the backlash of the show immediately. If they would have done this months ago...
Maybe they were hoping it would wash away.
Maybe, but at that point, I think if you wait that long, you should have...
That's one way to look at it, the way you're looking at it. But the other way to look at it, and I have thought about this, because I can see both sides of this one, is if they go, the whole panel is focused on that negativity.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't go, it's focused on the cast, and it's focused on their last run, their last panel. There's two ways to look at it. And as creators... yeah, should they have gone? Yeah, I don't think they should have wussed out of that. And actually, I think they probably should have had a panel of their own and done the cast separate. That would have been a way to do it. But you got to do what
you
got to
do. You know who else pulled out last minute of this whole thing?
Who?
My favorite person in the whole wide world, Ruby Rose.
Oh, for Batwoman, right? Because of...
Yep, for the same reason. She didn't want to have to face all the BS questions.
No, that's not what it was. They said because it was production. That the production was halted.
Well, that's what they said, but the rest of the Arrowverse was there.
That's true. And I don't
know.
Yeah,
but if it's her thing, she's going to have more scenes to shoot than them.
Well, okay. So, like, I hold on one second. So I bring up, you know, Ruby Rose didn't show up for the same sort of reason, because let's face it, Ruby Rose has begun to get a lot of backlash on the internet for playing that role. But we're quick to defend her for her reasoning for not being there.
No, I just offered an alternative.
You said that Benioff and Weiss, they pulled out for similar reasons. They had a scheduling conflict for something they're working on, which we know they're working on things, but yet that has to be bullshit. You can't play both sides of the field.
I did not defend her. I simply offered an alternative, which the same thing was offered for the Benioff, for the DV, for D&D, however we're referring to them. I simply said that, like, all of us know that they pretty much pulled out last minute, but I did mention at the beginning that there was scheduling conflicts, and I did the exact same thing for Ruby Rose. And I was just, nobody else had mentioned that there was that yet, and I wanted to make sure.
This feels like a Game of Thrones panel.
And I'm not saying one way or the other. Like, the girl probably, more than likely, she probably had the same response. But I'm just saying, to your point where you were like, well, the rest of the cast was there. Well, I mean, maybe, but if she really legitimately had to shoot, she has more scenes to shoot than everybody else. That's all I was saying.
Right.
That wouldn't be right, because the entire cast of all the other Arrow shows were there.
Right.
But
they're all the lead characters. Flash was there. Arrow was there.
Right, but they're not on the exact same production schedule.
Yeah,
I'm not defending her. I'm just saying that's an alternative way to consider it, instead of just saying, like, all of them.
Right, but you didn't give that sort of consideration, and you just attacked Benioff and Weiss for their reasonings. So, like, you're playing both sides. You're playing both sides here. For her, you're willing to say, okay, well, wait a minute. She has this. She has that. She has this. But for them, it's they pulled out last minute. It's disrespectful to their fans. It's all these other things. So you can't play both sides of that field.
They created the show. She has a show that has not even come out yet. They made a show that we watched for 8 years.
Here.
No, actually, I think I do, because you're trying to incorrectly compare the two. I'm talking about a show that people supported for years and years and years. And whatever their reason is, if it is scheduling, then let it be scheduling. But I'm just saying,
it was scheduling.
Okay.
We reported several times how they're working on other projects and what those other projects are. What they are in my head right now, I can't remember. But we have said,
the Star Wars trilogy. They're working on a Star Wars trilogy.
Right. So they're working on that. I think they were working on one other thing. Doesn't matter.
So then don't shit on Ruby Rose if you're going to defend them. It's the same argument that you have for me.
I'm not defending them because...
But you're saying it's a scheduling conflict for them, but it's not for her. So it's the same argument that you have against me.
No. That's not what he said.
Yes.
I've been listening to both of you. That's not what he said. That's not what he said.
Okay.
He said that you were making the argument more... You were turning it, saying because they created the show, they had more of a responsibility to be there. So you turned your argument just a minute ago. He's saying it's the same argument for both of them. So why wouldn't it be the same? That's what you both are saying.
I literally brought up one point to it. I was never defending her.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on this, but I love you and I respect you.
But on a lighter note, since we finally have Game of Thrones done, maybe the showrunners will show up sometime and do their own panel years from now, when people have simmered down.
Is there a way last minute for them to put a separate one in after they've started making...
Because
you've been
minute.
To Comic-Con?
Not last minute, no.
But like 3 months ago, would they have been able to say, instead of us doing it together, can we do a separate one?
It all depends on the schedules. All depends on the schedules. They've got a lot of stuff going on, so...
No, I know. I'm just saying you brought up the concept earlier of them splitting and having them do their own outside of the cast, and I think the cast should have had their own devoted to themselves...
And I'm just saying it's a fair point to make that they might have cited scheduling to bow out so it could be focused more on the positive. That would be a very, I think, an honorable way to do things, but to each their own. But you know what we had a lot of excitement about? And according to Kyle, who you're going to hear in a little while, he said this is what everybody was talking about at Comic-Con. Marvel. Marvel's panel, they released Phase 4.
And a little bit of Phase 5. Some details on it. So... sit in, put your seatbelts on, because we have a lot to go through. So Phase 4 is going to begin with Black Widow on May 1st, 2020. The plot is unknown at this time, but that hashtag show has word that the Black Widow movie will take place in the early 2000s before Natasha's Iron Man 2 introduction. Makes sense, considering she's, spoiler alert, dead. We can only presume from photos that the villain is Marvel's Taskmaster, who's most notably a mercenary hired as a training instructor by various criminal organizations. And Black Widow is going to have Dave Harbour as Alexi, Florence Pug, however you say her name.
Pug.
She was in Midsommar, if you're not familiar with who she is, and she'll be Yelena. And Rachel Weisz is going to be Melina. And then ScarJo, of course, is going to be Black Widow.
So it's a prequel. Does that mean that they can have sequels then? or because it's not going to tie into the greater mythology. Well, maybe they have a plan for that. I don't know. Maybe they're going to do some background stuff.
Of things that you didn't see well, in things the Avengers. That
might pay off in other movies, but in a more forward-thinking capacity. Like, what happened in 1997 in Budapest actually pays off in The Eternals or one of the other movies that are coming up.
I mean, it's a good possibility. I would hope that they would tie it into the rest of it somehow.
It seems like an interesting idea. You know, I'm done trying to gauge where Marvel's going to take us, and let's just let them tell us their story, because so far they've been pretty good at it. So let them do it.
Well, then we have the Eternals, and this one I'm going to go through a little bit of background information in case you're not familiar with the characters. I'll keep it succinct.
It's okay. You know what's going to happen is a year from now everybody's going to be an expert on this. So
yeah, because you can get ahead of my commentary.
Yeah, you can get ahead of the curve.
You're welcome. So The Eternals will come out November 6th, 2020, and this is the saga of The Eternals, a race of immortal beings who lived on Earth and shaped its history and civilizations. Angelina Jolie is cast as Athena, kind of to tie on Athena, because they're kind of all aligned with Greek mythology, if you don't catch on to that. And her superpowers, she possesses superhuman strength. She's kind of the leader, speed, stamina, durability, all of that good stuff. She can also manipulate cosmic energy and use that for invulnerability and immortality and project this energy as a weapon. She can fly. She can do all the cool stuff. And she wields a bow.
So she's the queen on the chessboard. Got it.
Yeah. All right. Richard Madden is going to be Icarus and has many of the same powers as Athena and the other Eternals, but can outfly most of them. He has some basic psychic abilities, but then one thing that's really important, that he can generate enough heat to melt or disintegrate solid objects through manipulation of cosmic energy, but overusing that power can temporarily sap him out of his strength. So that's going to probably be a plot point that they'll use. Kumail Nanjiani is going to be Kingo, which is sort of like a Renaissance man and an accomplished swordsman who studied the ways of samurai for years in Japan. And
Kumail is?
Yeah.
I want to see that.
Yep.
Well, he deadpans.
He chooses an epic sword which can cut through anything forged by a fellow Eternal, and rarely uses his superpowers even though he possesses them. He's also got a part to play in the long-running conflict with the Celestial known as Taimut, the Communicator, aka the Dreaming Celestial. And then the one that Aaron's probably most excited for, Salma Hayek, is Ajak, traditionally a man who is well-versed in archaeology, and it's the only one who is capable of direct communication with the Celestials, but the rest of the power set is you're pretty much godlike fare.
I don't care about that movie in any way, shape, or form.
Really?
Except for Salma Hayek. That's literally the only thing I care about. It's just not, it doesn't speak to me. I mean, it might by the time the advertisement comes around. Then I'll get excited. What about you, Johnny?
I'm sort of in the same boat because I don't have any sort of background on the comic, but what I can tell you on the comic is that it was something that was written, created, and drawn all by Jack Kirby. So this is Jack Kirby's baby.
Mm.
And the idea behind the Celestials is that they're a race that was developed by the Celestials. So in Thor, we've seen a Celestial, or actually, I'm sorry, Guardians of the Galaxy, we've seen a Celestial. And so the whole fact that the Celestials are in the MCU and they're creating the Eternals, that means that we will be seeing some other cool things. But again, it's not something I have a background in, so I'm not sure how to feel about it. But it's Marvel's story; it might be fine.
Well, then we have Shang-Chi in the Legends of the Ten Rings. Shang is a young hero standing against his criminal father. I actually think this story is really interesting. And he spent his formative years learning martial arts and thinking his father was this humanitarian, but then later learned the truth through Fu Manchu's nemesis, Sir Dennis Nayland Smith. And recently, because he goes through this period where he's like an MI6 agent and fights his later resurrected father and his siblings and then joins the new Heroes for Hire. But recently he's become a member of the main Avengers just for fun and had a fling with Domino. And in this solo film, we'll battle the Mandarin, which is what everybody's really excited about because we thought it was more like a myth. It wasn't actually a legitimate creature.
It was a hoax.
Character. Right. And so the Mandarin made his debut in the comics in 64, and through studying McLuhan science, I don't know how to say it, he learned how to utilize the 10 powerful rings from a ship. And so that's why, you know, he's a big baddie that we're finally getting to see is real. And that's February 12th, 2021.
I hope that's a hoax again.
Really?
Yep. Just keep screwing with us.
I hope it's Trevor. Somehow Trevor actually got powers while he was in jail.
I hope it's Doug. Remember Doug from Thor? I want it to be Doug.
Oh, that'd be funny. That'd be even funnier.
Oh, I should mention it has Awkwafina and Simu Liu as Shang-Chi and Tony Chow Wai Lung as...
They all wish you wouldn't mention it. Yeah, right. Every single one of them.
Now, supposedly there was a version of Shang-Chi that had the ability of multiplying himself. Does it talk anything like that? Or is it just sticking to his martial arts ability?
Not that I read about. I mean, of course, there's only, you know, every place has their own concepts that they're going to be bringing into it. But I had to research for this information and it didn't mention any of that.
Did you read the articles?
Okay.
Yeah, went and got my That's own great. Articles.
As long as you read the articles this time. I'm just, you know.
I actually have links to all of them if you would like them.
No, I read it.
Okay.
I'm good.
Well, I thought...
Was Seth Rogen at this panel?
Oh, my God. Anyway, so we have Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness with Scarlet Witch on May 7th, 2021. And this is kind of taking Doctor Strange back to his roots. And what he does best is fending off the horrors that the daylight world cannot even imagine. He's the only MCU superhero who can do a lot of this stuff. And his villains and lore were inspired by the writings of legendary American horror writer H.P. Lovecraft. WandaVision will actually cross over with this movie, which we'll talk about later, because right now we're just talking movies. But I think that's kind of exciting, too.
No, I'm really hot for this movie. This is, of the things that are listed movie-wise, this is the one I'm really hot for.
I have concerns, but they relate to the TV stuff, so we'll wait till we get there.
Okay. So no other thoughts?
I'm not a big Doctor Strange. See, this is like, this whole phase, Shang-Chi, or Shang-Chi, however you want to say it.
I don't know.
Whatever the correct way to say that. The only one that I care about. I don't...
Really?
Black Widow's not a character I ever needed a whole movie about. And Doctor Strange isn't one that I liked it fine, but that whole multiverse stuff is just something I'm not. We're going to turn it into a horror movie. Like Scott Derrickson is the director and he's made several horror movies, but I don't think he's ever made a good one. So that concerns me because I don't think he's a very good director. There you go. That's how I feel.
That's fair. Going back to the Shang-Chi, Chai, however you say it, that one, I think that one's going to speak to you just because of the dynamic of the relationship between that character and his father, and I hope that they pull a lot of that in there.
And plus, I love seeing the Mandarin because that's a cool character that was, you know, not really a character in the last time.
Yeah.
They're not going to get me again, though. If Ben Kingsley shows up, I'm not going. I'm not doing it.
Well, here's one that a lot of people are really excited about, and that's Thor: Love and Thunder, which comes out November 5th, 2021. Valkyrie is the new king of Asgard, will be the first openly gay MCU superhero, and is on the prowl for her own queen. When they were shooting Ragnarok, there was a storyline by Jason Aaron called The Mighty Thor. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's full of love and emotion and thunder. And this is part of the quote from What's-His-Face. But it introduces for the first time a female Thor.
Kevin Feige.
That guy. A female Thor, Natalie Portman. So she's actually going to be wielding the hammer, and that's pretty exciting.
I hate this.
Why?
She was so checked out in Thor 2. So checked out.
Natalie Portman. She's had a lot of years to like check back in.
I don't care. She's a great actress. I have no doubt about her acting. You go back to The Professional. I've loved her forever. Thor 2, she was barely present. And that whole, she didn't like the director. She didn't like, I don't care. She was still checked out. And she, have you ever seen her? She weighs 1 pound, one, maybe a metric pound. I don't know, but she doesn't weigh much. And it's the idea that she's going to be, which I love the female Thor because that's a great character. It really is. Look it up in the comic books. I just don't see that. I don't. People didn't see it when she was first cast. I just haven't had any ounce that she was actually excited about this role. Other than she got to hold the hammer at the press conference.
I was going to say, she seemed pretty excited holding the
hammer. I really do hope that pans out. I really, really do. Because this could be a really cool movie. I firmly believe that. Even though I didn't love Thor Ragnarok, I think this is a cool idea if they can pull it off. It's just Natalie Portman has seemed so uninterested in any of the Thor movies she's actually been in. It makes it hard for me to believe she's going to make a wonderful female Thor.
I'm excited for this idea because I do love the comic behind this, and the comic behind it is pretty great. And the way they executed it is a lot of fun. And the whole story behind how Jane becomes Thor is interesting.
It's a great story. Heartfelt.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Do I think Natalie Portman can do it? I hope she can. I hope that one of the reasons why she kind of felt the way she did was might be, you know, to speculate, but could be one of those things where she's like, okay, great. I'm just a love interest in this. I want to be more of a hero. And maybe giving her this opportunity will get her more invested to the idea of being more of the hero and being able to pull off this role. But the thing is, though, is that when Jane becomes Thor, she doesn't become Jane's version of Thor. She becomes Thor.
Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate for...
It's still a female, though. I mean, it's still a woman.
But does her hair change colors?
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Really?
Everything about... Well, she goes from being completely bald because in the comics she has cancer.
Right.
And she's dying.
It saves
and
her life.
So, and it saves her life. Exactly. So... she becomes blonde hair, much larger in stature, but she's still obviously female. And it'll be interesting to see how they pull this off because she becomes Thor for every intents and purpose. They're very careful in the comics, and they've already stated in these press conferences that this isn't Lady Thor, this isn't Thorette, this isn't Queen Thor. This is Thor, and that is a very distinct. Difference between the other ideas of a lady thing.
So I got the answer. Almost... We can tie it all back together. Brienne of Tarth ends up being Thor. That way I get rid of Natalie Portman and I get a better actress that actually seems to want to play this
so
part.
She's so cool. Oh my there gosh. But is it kind of like the idea is that Thor is more Wendell of an embodiment then and can kind of whoever can wield it, they somehow... become that god, and that's why Thor that we know looks like Thor. Otherwise, I'm confused how this all operates.
You have to read the comics. It's weird.
It is weird because Thor is still Thor. He's just in the comics, he's just kind of useless for a while. Because
Cap uses it and he never gets blonde hair.
Right.
So it's weird.
Maybe you have to sleep with Thor and then you're able to change your...
Well, now you're making it weirder. It was already weird enough.
Well, anyway. Otherwise, what's the explanation? Why doesn't Cap change?
This is where I tell the kids, read a comic book. Read a comic book. It's too hard to explain. If you really want to know, go read a comic book. Because I don't even understand it.
I read my Scarlet Witch. All right, so let's move into TV streaming releases, which are considered canon for Phase 4. The first up is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which comes out fall 2020. Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier appeared to talk about their excitement for the show and tease its villain, Baron Zemo.
Zemo. Right.
Zemo.
From
Civil War.
So I look forward to having a master plan. Okay. All right. What else we got on Disney Plus?
The one I'm most excited about from all of these panels. WandaVision, which comes out spring 2021, is set after Endgame. It's intended to explore the Scarlet Witch's headspace after losing her boyfriend and being dust for 5 years. Joining the cast is Tiana Paris, known for her starring turn in Spike Lee's Chi-Raq as Monica Rambeau. Monica last appeared as a child in Captain Marvel, but in the comics, she's also the hero Spectrum, who previously went by the name Captain Marvel. Interesting. Are you guys excited for that one? What was your complaint about that ties into the... Wasn't there something else you wanted to mention?
I do, but get through these first. I'll do it at the end.
Okay. Then there's Loki, which is spring 2021, follows the events of Endgame and appears to be focused on the Loki who stole the Tesseract in Avengers Endgame that escaped in 2012. What if... ... comes out summer 2021. Jeffrey Wright narrated a brief sequence from Disney Plus show What If, which also served as the announcement of his role as the Watcher, a cosmic being that oversees the multiverse and will perceive the different versions of familiar stories. Wright won't be all alone because there's a huge cast of characters that will appear, with everyone from Hayley Atwell, the first actor confirmed from the series, to Natalie Portman reprising their Marvel
role. Oh, because all of a sudden she's excited.
And then last but not least, we have Hawkeye, which comes out fall 2021. Jeremy Renner showed off an animated teaser for Hawkeye, which will focus on him training another hero with no powers, Kate Bishop. We still don't really know who will play this character, but we do know that the show will appear on Disney Plus, of course, for $6.99 per month in the fall of 2021.
All right. So you got through all that. That's cool. A lot of people are excited. I do want to see Falcon and Cap. Loki sounds interesting, and... I would probably watch Hawkeye, because I would watch Jeremy Renner. WandaVision, I just don't think Scarlet Witch is that interesting, but that's my opinion. Hey, everybody loves who they love, you know? I'm not knocking you, Amanda, for loving her. What concerns me is that these shows are canon, unlike Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all the Marvel Netflix shows. I'm concerned that they're going to try and build all the mythology together, so you're going to miss things if you don't see the TV shows, and I don't want that, because I really don't have I might get Disney Plus at some point.
I'm going to borrow somebody's Disney Plus.
Maybe, but there's nothing here that really makes me go, I have to have a Disney Plus membership. I just, Falcon and Cap, maybe, or Falcon and Winter Soldier, maybe. Maybe, just because I like those two together. Outside of that, I got plenty of TV shows I'd rather watch, and I'm kind of superheroed out. So I don't need all that stuff. So I want to be able to go to the movie. If I decide to go to one of these movies that I'm not interested in, I don't want to lose any continuity because I didn't watch it, because I don't think that's fair. That's where my concerns are.
Yeah, I'm going to have to co-sign that, because I have pretty much the same problem. Will I live off of Disney Plus in any way, shape, or form? I'll probably get it for the month that I need it to catch up on everything if something's coming out, and then cancel it right away again.
I'm more interested in The Mandalorian than I am any of the Marvel shows, because Jon Favreau's behind that. So,
well, then we have.
I feel bad because everybody's like seems really excited about this stuff, and I just am not, and I keep trying to be. What if I hear a lot of that sounds like a great idea? If it wasn't animated, I don't really watch many animated shows, and it's animated. It sounds like a really cool idea. What would happen if certain events in the Marvel world didn't happen to these certain characters? They all come back. Now, if that were a live action thing, that sounds like a fantastic show, but it's animated. I don't really watch that much animation. So John might love that. I'm not really on board.
Yeah, I'll totally watch it. But again, this whole thing that where the What If series has no business being canon because it's What If.
Right. And I don't think it is, right? Like, that's not
right.
Canon.
It's yeah. What the What If series in the comics is not canon right. either. So,
well, and the concept of What If, from my understanding, is that each episode or whatever would be a different story. Mm-hmm. So how would they? I don't know how they would possibly make that canon.
I don't think it's necessarily going to be canon. It's just something they want to play with. They're playing with the established Marvel canon. They're playing with the other things. Like if that hadn't happened,
right?
If what happened in Endgame hadn't happened that way, and this character was on this journey, what if? I love the idea. I just don't want to watch it in animated form.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility.
Yeah, it's like,
what if Peter Parker
was the Incredible Hulk?
Right.
What if Peter Parker still had Uncle Ben?
That's a weird one. It's almost like they could do that if they really cared, which they don't.
We'll move on. So in development is our phase 5. And
thanks
there's
for the tears.
You're welcome. I'm just going to run through the list because there's not much information except for Blade has Mahershala Ali.
And got cast. Wesley Snipes' endorsement today.
He did. Yep. Wesley messed around a little bit, though, on Twitter at first before he put that, like, just kidding, I'm really all about it. He was like, oh, funny. It's like MCU has done this before, something, something, something. And I was like, oh, you go, Wesley. So we have Blade. We have Fantastic Four, Black Panther 2, Captain Marvel 2, Mentions of Mutants, and then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Any of these pique your interests?
Blade.
You didn't sound excited or interested. Blade.
Well, I'm having trouble being excited for what the MCU is going to do now, because with what we have coming up and with the stuff that they're mentioning is coming on, it's like I'm having trouble seeing the through line, whereas before the through line was pretty obvious to me. So now I'm having trouble seeing the through line for the first time, and so I got to see them start doing what they're doing versus getting all excited about this. This might be the time where Marvel starts losing their footing. This might be we had this great idea and we followed it from point A to point B and we did it flawlessly. Now it's time to go from point B to point C and D, and this is where they may lose their footing.
Here's what I would say on it. You've got a decade where guys like John and myself, because I know you're just now getting into comic books, Amanda. We knew the majority of the storylines that were being told. Right. All the way up through Endgame. We knew the majority of those stories because we were familiar with them. Now you're getting into, you're starting a whole new era of characters that we're not that familiar with. It's kind of, but you know, I kind of go back to Guardians of the Galaxy because I didn't know anything about that comic other than what they look like. And I never in a million years thought that could work. And it ended up being like one of my favorite franchises, which I'm actually really sad. They are working on Guardians 3. That's, you didn't mention that one, did you?
Did
you?
Did.
Okay.
No, she did.
So I still have faith in Marvel. It's just, I don't know these characters, so it's hard to get excited. I refuse to be one of those people who just gets excited because you said Marvel. I have to actually see something. Once I see the trailer, I'm sure I'll be all on board. Fantastic Four, I'm not excited about because it's been done twice. I'm kind of tired of the whole idea. I know they love it. I know there's fans that love it. That's great. I'm really happy for you. I don't care. Honestly, I kind of like the first one with Jessica Alba. Yeah, I admit it. I like that. I thought it was fun.
I'm with you.
So Blade gets me really excited because I love Blade. I'm concerned that it'll be PG-13 because Kevin Feige has 100% control, creative control of everything, and he seems to really feel that's the direction. It should be a safe product. I'm also worried about Deadpool 3 because they own it now, and you heard no mention of Deadpool.
That's a great point. Oh my God, how did I not even think about that?
Because they wanted you to not think about it because they were showing you all the... They were playing three-card Monty on that stage. Nobody even asked them about Deadpool. Nobody. I'm like, why would that not be a question someone asked? That's one of the biggest Fox properties still. Bigger than X-Men at this point.
Right.
So,
because it's more... They successfully told that story better than they did with X-Men.
Exactly. And nobody asked. And... You know, reporters have kind of not asked the question to Kevin Feige directly. And when it feels like that should be a point in question, I have not seen anyway. I'm sure there might be one that exists. I haven't seen a direct question about Deadpool asked to Kevin Feige, only to the Disney head who isn't going to care. He's going to go with whatever Feige says. So I don't know. Deadpool's what I'm concerned about because Deadpool to me right now is my number one Marvel property.
Well, this is really sad.
No, that doesn't mean I'm right. They might care.
It still makes me sad. Now I'm sitting in anticipation and waiting to find out what's going to happen to Deadpool.
It's not even in development. That's where I was concerned. You brought up everything else. Blade, it's a phase 5. It's not even going to be part of phase 4. And that's been mentioned, but not Deadpool. So that's a concern.
That is a concern.
I'm all right with it.
What? I want a Deadpool 3 bad. I love that series.
But, it's a great series, and they did a fantastic job with it. But I don't know. I would rather them leave it where they left it as opposed to come back with a PG-13 version of it. I don't want to see a neutered Deadpool as much as...
I agree with that, yeah.
He actually fires on every single cylinder of things that annoy me, but I appreciate it because it's so charming and fun. So it's a weird spot for me. I appreciate the fact that they went dirty with him and they used every single trick in his book as far as the comic book's concerned. But he's not a character that I like in general. But I like those movies. If that makes any sense, I probably twisted it around way too many times.
No, I got it. Yeah, I got it.
There seems to be some concepts based off of what Kevin Feige has said that you probably won't see any characters previously owned by Fox until earliest 2025.
And that's fine.
That's a long time from now.
It's totally fine.
Not for Deadpool, it's not. The team already exists. That to me 100% says it will not be an R-rated Deadpool. It's going to be his version of Deadpool, which isn't my version of Deadpool. So, I mean, just because I don't want it doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's just not what I want.
I mean, they're going to use him at some point. It's just a matter of are they going to introduce him into the Avengers as like a PG-13 character or...
He would be if he was in the Avengers. There's no way they would keep Deadpool as he is.
I'm sure.
Well, not focusing on Deadpool, but focusing on the idea of the X-Men universe, right? Waiting until 2025.
I'm fine with that.
And then... I'm fine with that because I'm had it up to here with Nightcrawler, Jean Grey. I've had it up to Cyclops, Wolverine. I've had it all up to here with it all. Bring me a new Kitty Pryde. Bring me some new people and let's see how we can go with these unused X-Men, which there are a lot of great ones. And let's see where we go with it. But, like, really, I've had it up to here with X-Men.
I mean, you've said it three times, so I think you're headed up to here, and I know I have. Is that it for Marvel?
That is it for my entire panel.
I am so tired. All right. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Right now, here is our interview with Kyle Nolan, who is our man on the street. And now I am here with Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net. That's NoReruns.net. He covers everything at Comic-Con. Kyle?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Are you tired?
I am exhausted. I literally fell asleep last night with a, I was in the middle of tweeting something or filling out an Instagram, and it was waiting on the filling in the location. And I just fell asleep because I woke up with my iPad on my stomach and the Instagram message right there, but just not posted.
See, that's what people, unless you've been to Comic-Con, people don't realize. It's great, it's wonderful, but it's an exhausting trip for you even more so.
Yeah, just getting used to the time change and 3 hours of sleep a night. It's long.
And you do a ton of interviews with this thing, right? So do you have any idea how many actors, creative talent, everything else you interviewed over the course of 4 or 5 days?
I didn't count it up, but I think it was probably like 13 to 15 press rooms, and each one probably has at least 5 or 6 different people that we interview.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a long, long day. Although one of them only had one, they put all three at the table and we just interviewed them together, and that was nice.
Yeah, I did that when I did Neil deGrasse Tyson. It was like three people at a table, all asking questions, and him just ignoring the dumb ones, which was pretty fantastic.
So, yeah, it's always good when they pair up people, because then you don't have to come up with all the questions. And then also, if they pair up all the talent, they all riff off of one another, and it usually makes for an entertaining session.
And I assume you're going to be putting those up at NoRemotes.net.
I'll be putting those up as soon as I get a chance to edit them and post them.
Okay, excellent. All right, so first question. It's the 50th anniversary for people that didn't know. This is the number 50 for Comic-Con. Did it feel special to you? Did anything feel different or more unique?
Not really. I mean, they made a big deal of it leading into this, but it didn't really feel all that different. If anything, it felt less special than usual, because it seemed like a lot of people, like a lot of the press people that I normally see there, either weren't there or there were a lot of new press people and a lot of turnaround in the people who are running the press rooms. So it felt a little different that way, but overall it didn't really feel like, besides all the banners promoting, hey, it's our 50th anniversary, it didn't feel all that different, except maybe that giant Marvel thing, which I wasn't there for that, but bringing on like all these cast people that felt like a 50th type of thing to do. And I mean, they also had a lot of anniversary type panels. Like they had it's Scooby-Doo's birthday and it's Sesame Street's birthday. And so they had a lot of things like that, that were based on anniversaries of different shows or different programs.
Hold up. You talk about Marvel. That's great. Did you go to Scooby-Doo's birthday? Because
I only went to one panel the whole time. It was the very last thing I did, and it was for a Lego DC Batman movie, which was really entertaining, but I didn't. That was the first and only panel, and that was like 2 o'clock on Sunday. So I literally finished out the con with a panel.
Well, I mean, you're doing press stuff, so you're kind of having your own panel. It's an individual panel.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a lot of people already know about the Marvel slate, and we're going to talk about it on the normal podcast, but that was, I assume, one of the bigger things people were talking about on the floor.
Yeah, I didn't even know what was going on, but I was in the Arrow press room and then in the Good Place press room, or the Brooklyn Nine-Nine press room, and across both of them, people were constantly refreshing their phones and announcing, hey, they just announced this movie. Hey, they just announced this movie. And so it was rapid fire with each announcement. It became the discussion in between interviews.
Okay, you were in the Arrow one. Can I ask you, did you talk to Stephen Amell?
I had to leave. He was the last person that was going to come to my table. I left to go to the Brooklyn Nine-Nine room, and I missed him. Oh, he would have been the last person that I would have gotten to speak to.
Was it worth it to go to the Brooklyn Nine-Nine room?
I think so. Okay. I mean, we got most of the actors. It was one of the ones I mainly wanted to do. The NBC comedies were the ones I was really looking forward to, so I didn't want to be late for that room. So I ended up leaving Arrow at the wrong time, apparently.
You know it's his last year, right?
Yes, yes.
I bet you're regretting that one now. You're like, what are you going to do? All right, so when you go to Comic-Con and you walk on the floor, a lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of activations. Now, that's basically, well, you can explain. How would you define an activation for people?
So a lot of the activations are actually outside of the convention center. The different companies, whether it be a TV company or a movie company, they just put on these giant immersive exhibitions where you go in and they have actors playing roles and you just feel like you're part of this movie or this TV show. And they do a really good job of just bringing you into that world. So they have just all kinds of different things. Like some are escape room type of things, or they're just immersive things with actors, or some are even rides. Like last year I did the Jack Ryan thing, which was all of those combined. Like you were driving a Jeep, you were going down a zip line. So that was more interactive than what Amazon did this year, but they still went all out this year with their activation.
What was theirs?
So they had three different shows. They had The Expanse, Carnival Row, and The Boys. Mm. For The Expanse, you went into this, it was like the spaceship. You went in, you were part of some UN team that was investigating this situation on a planet, and you basically got sucked in. When you walked in, they split everyone off into several groups that went and investigated different parts of this planet. And so you became part of that story just with that group. So you could go and redo this thing five times and get a completely different experience every time if you end up as part of a different group.
Okay.
And then for Carnival Row, you started off there. You selected whether you wanted to be human or a creature. And fortunately, I picked human because I guess in the show, the creatures are treated like second-class citizens. So all the creatures had to wait for all the humans to go in before they started processing that line.
That's great.
Some of the people that were in that line, it took them 45 minutes to get in, and I walked right in as a human. It was amazing.
Not so great for them.
But when you walked in, basically then it, like the cops led you into this, it was like a bazaar or a marketplace, and there were creatures interacting with you saying like, oh, I'm trying to sell you this potato or this cabbage. Like they were trying to sell you random stuff. And when I was in there, I heard someone behind me. It was a creature who was trying to buy a potato, and the cop ran over. No, he's a human, he gets that potato. So then I'm carrying around this potato now for the rest of the time. It got shoved in my hand. And then but the experience was a little different. So like if you were a creature, the cops were like yelling at you and treating you like garbage when you were in there. Uh-huh. And then in order to get to the second half of the thing, which was this nightclub lounge area, the humans had to try to sneak in, but the creatures just had to knock and they would open the door for them and let them in. And then when you were in there, there was someone like a creature singing on a stage, and then other people were like randomly pulling people to the side to these little booths. Like some had peepholes, apparently. I never got pulled over, but it was like this like sort of nightclub / strip club type of thing. And hey, so
all right,
I never got pulled over to any of this stuff, but I heard from other people who got like they pointed him to a peephole and hey, look through this hole, and there was like pictures of naked women.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it was like they just went. And then while we were in there, then the cops eventually raided that, and they're like screaming, looking for a certain creature that's hiding in there. So I like they really pulled you into this whole story of the show. I'm curious to see what the show is about.
And what was your favorite activation of all the stuff that you went to?
I think it was this one because there was so much to do, because they also had another one that was for the boys. And then in addition to all that, they had this stage that was set up in the middle, and every hour they were doing these like random presentations or performances. Mm-hmm. So when we were there, they had one for the boys. Like the boys, I don't know if you're familiar with what it's about. It's like superheroes who are doing it all for fame and fortune. So they're not really the nice guys, but they have superpowers. So when we were there, the performance that was happening was all these people that had formed a soup support group for all the superheroes that had ruined their lives. And so like, so they were going off on these stories, and some were just so bizarre and hilarious, but they were treating them so serious. Like one person was claiming that a superhero gave her chlamydia. And so this was nuts. And like, then they're like, as soon as each person would finish their story, they start chanting soup sucks, soup sucks. And they would get the whole audience into cheering for that. And so it was like really entertaining, like this whole experience in that Amazon thing.
That sounds fantastic. All right. So you covered a lot of press, at least 13 rooms and a bunch of other stuff while you were at Comic-Con. And I know, you know, we could probably talk for 3 hours about everything, but just give me the top three things you covered and why those were so memorable for you. Why were those whatever they were, those three events or presses or whatever you did, what were the top three?
Yeah, so one that was really a surprise, because most of these I record video, but some of them they don't allow you to do video and you only are allowed to do audio. So mm-hmm. the one that I did that was audio only was Creepshow, which is a new series that's coming to Shudder.
Okay, I remember that.
And so in the room they had Greg Nicotero, who everyone knows from Walking Dead or whatever other million things he's done right. with creature effects and things. And then they also had Trisha Helfer, Giancarlo Esposito, and DJ Qualls.
Oh, are you kidding me?
So it was an amazing room.
Yeah,
it's an amazing room. And people had some pretty amazing stories. I don't know if it's just because I wasn't so obsessed with like looking through the camera and trying to line up a shot, and just I was able to just sit back and relax. And I also had the seat right next to them, so it was like I was having a conversation with them, and mm-hmm. it was like really interesting. Like Greg Nicotero told us stories of how he was a young, well, not a boy, but he was younger, like, and he would just go visit the set of Creepshow, and he became friends with George Romero, mm-hmm. and just was working on that, not unofficially working on that, just going and visiting set and seeing what he was doing, and was so inspired that that's what made him want to join this business and be part of that. So he was telling us all kinds of stories about that. And then DJ Qualls was also talking about going from his teen comedies to more serious stuff, and how he doesn't get upset when people recognize him for the teen comedies, because without that stuff, he wouldn't even have the career that he has. So he was very happy about that, even though that's not necessarily what he wants to be recognized right. for.
He's humble.
So yeah, it was just a really entertaining and interesting room. I mean, Adrienne Barbeau was supposed to be there, but she was sick, and they basically called her up on a cell phone and put it in the middle of the table, and we were supposed to hover around it. It didn't work. The guy was like, just record her responses and you can listen back to them later. But I haven't tried listening back to see what she said, but it was just bizarre.
Can I ask, did you get a glimpse of the show, Creepshow, at all, or no?
Yes, so we got descriptions of several of the different episodes. So what it's going to be for the first season is 6 episodes with 2 stories in each one. And so they definitely are going for a horror vibe on each one, but it does sound like it still has that comedy aspect, because there was one about something about a guy who does some drugs and then start seeing some bizarre things, and that one sounded much more like a comedy. Mm-hmm. DJ Qualls' episode, his sounded like it's basically just him for the whole thing, and he said, oh yeah, they gave me like 39 pages to memorize, and he said, and we were all shocked that he was able to memorize 39 pages of stuff, but he said no, he really enjoyed it. Like, if he could memorize 12 pages overnight, he was going to take the job, and he did that.
Wow.
And then Trisha Helfer's, hers is about her caught in an elevator after she does some bad things to a coworker. So that sounded, she said there's a little bit of humor in that, but it's mainly serious.
Did you actually get to see it though, or just hear descriptions of it?
No, I didn't get to see any of the episodes. We just were talking to them. They described a lot of the episodes.
Understood. But it's something you're excited about.
Yeah, I definitely want to check it out.
All right. And what's your other two?
So I would say the parties, definitely, like the WB party and the NBC party were both nice, because they have the cast mingle with everyone. So like the WB party was set up like a carnival. They had hot dogs and hamburgers and all kinds of popcorn and donuts and things. They had carnival games, like you could go pop balloons with darts and shoot the water gun races and skee ball and basketball toss and things like that. So, but then we also got to mingle, like all the people there, like Arrow was there. I saw him a million times walking around. And
well, there was your other chance. Why did you run up to him?
I got a picture with him last year, so I didn't bother to talk to him this year. I talked to one of the guys from the 100, and that was pretty much it for the celebrities. But they had, I mean, anyone who's anyone on any of these CW shows, they were definitely there mingling around. And then the NBC party, they had that set up in their activation, which was like a recreation of the Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the precinct.
Man, and they're pushing that one hard, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, last year they did The Good Place. This year it was Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So there was lots of cast members there. Not as much as the WB party, but I saw Mark Evan Jackson, Darcy Carden, and William Jackson Harper from The Good Place there. Also, I ran into Manny Jacinto, who plays Jason. So we were talking to him for a while, and a person I was with is named Jason. So he asked for a photo and said, "Hey, my name's Jason also." And so he smiled. And then I said, "Well, my name's not Jason. Can I still have a photo?" And then he's like, "Oh, is your name Jianyu?" Which was his character's original name that we thought he was when it first started. So it took me a second to get his joke, but then I was like, "Oh, okay." Yeah. And then, so that was humorous. And then later on, Terry Crews was just making his way through the crowd, taking rapid fire selfies. So I got my camera out and ready for when he passed by.
Well, explain this, because you were telling me this story. So basically, he's just quick hitting everybody, doing selfies, like, "Get your cameras ready, here I come."
Oh, yeah, yeah. He didn't even say that. He was just pointing to a person saying, "Ready?" And so you had to have your camera out and ready to take that shot. And then he just leaned in. You took the picture and he was off to the next person.
That's
so
fantastic.
He was just moving his way through that crowd super fast.
That's like the most Terry Crews thing Terry Crews could ever do. All right. What's your last one? What's your top three? Round out your top three.
So, I mean, another one that I really enjoyed was the Pandora Room, which was it's a new CW show that started last week. And so what I was just impressed there was, like, part of the interview process, it felt like I was in a one shot from a movie, because like we'd be talking to one person, and then they'd move in a second person who'd join them for a little while, and then they'd move out the first person. And so it would like flow from person to person, and any two people they had together, they had such great chemistry, and it was just a lot of fun hearing these people talk about what they're doing and how they work together. And one interesting thing everyone kept mentioning was how the producers seem to have like a mole in their thing, because anything that happens to them offset, they seem to find out about it and work it into the stories about the characters.
Really?
Like one of them said, like, he was scared of wasps or something, and now his character is suddenly scared of wasps, and someone ate some bad taco or something, and now that happens to one of their characters on the show. So they seem to, all these stories seem to work their way into the show itself.
That's pretty fantastic. All right, so here's a little trickier of a question. Now, I kind of want to know, and I told you ahead of time, so you had time to think of them, but what were the top three things that you only heard about from the excitement of other fans, because you weren't there, you couldn't make it, whatever, you heard people talking about it?
The biggest one was definitely the Marvel announcements.
That's
because I wasn't there, and people were just doing the play-by-play, and everyone was so thrilled and excited with this. And I'm like, I have never heard of this property. I think it was Shang-Li or whatever that Shang-Chi. One was. I was like, I have never heard of this, but everyone seems excited by it. And so, yeah, that was definitely the biggest one. Another one was the Picard stuff.
Oh, so, yeah, the trailer that dropped, yeah.
So everyone was, the fact that they're bringing back all these other TNG cast members is to be part of it as well. So that was exciting to hear about.
And did you have a third? Was there another one? Or are those like the two, the only two people were talking about because they were so stuck on those?
Those were the main two. The third is sort of an indirect one. So I was at the Lego DC Batman Family Matters press room, and the excitement of all these people as they were talking about the various Batman characters that were in this movie. And I realized just how little I know about Batman. Because they were like, "Oh, this is the such and such Robin and this Robin." And I'm like, I didn't know there was more than one Robin.
Oh,
and like, then
no.
They're excited about all these other characters that were in it. And then at the end of that presentation of that movie, so there's hints that there's going to be a Shazam Lego movie that they do direct to video. And so that excitement turned into, that's all they were getting for questions after the panel. No one was asking about Batman. Everyone was asking, is there going to be a Lego Shazam movie? And so finally they had to say, okay, enough with the Lego Shazam questions. We're going to ask about Batman now.
That's pretty. So you're saying like Shazam is trumping Batman at Comic-Con in a way?
At this Lego Batman movie panel, everyone was all excited because Billy Babson was in it, and they're like, so does that mean there's going to be a Shazam one after this? And they all but confirmed it. They basically said yes, but they can't legally say that they're working on it yet. But there's definitely going to be one.
So is the impression that you're getting that the Lego movies for the DC characters are going to be more made for video and streaming and whatnot, as opposed to going to theatrical?
It seems that way, but they definitely treat them as different properties. So the people that do all these direct-to-video ones aren't the same group of people that do the theatrical ones.
Okay, I understand. All right, man. Well, you covered the bases, the taking us to the streets of Comic-Con. Was there anything else, like maybe that wasn't part of the entertainment stuff that really just like blew your mind and like really stuck with, like one favorite memory from Comic-Con this year that you haven't already talked about? You said you had a cosplay story.
Oh yeah. So we were at the we were playing South Park mini golf. We got a tea time for Thursday morning.
Okay.
So we were playing that. And while we were waiting to go to that, this guy walks by. He's got some costume that he's got a ginormous hammer. This thing's like is bigger than a human being. And so someone's like, "Oh, that's a nice hammer. That's awfully big." You know, he had this line stored for ever to comment anytime someone said that. He's like, "Oh, I'm not overcompensating for anything. Don't worry."
That's ridiculous. What people don't realize is like half the people at Comic-Con dress up.
You cannot look down the streets without seeing at least half the people dressed in some sort of costume. Like even on my flight home when I went to the airport, I could see a guy, there was a David Tennant looking Doctor Who guy waiting in line to check into his flight.
That's amazing.
I don't know why he just didn't take the TARDIS. That would have been faster.
Ah! As he was, well played. All right. Well, thank you once again, Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net. Thanks again for doing this so much. I really do appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
All right, now we're back, and it's time for John's panel. What do we got, John?
All right, so coming up first, I, of course, had to jump on the Jay and Silent Bob reboot trailer. Oh, my God. This looks like a train wreck that I'm going to love in the best way possible.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Were you?
I were. There was actually a moment where I yipped in the trailer.
You yipped?
I think I know which moment that was.
I yipped. I yipped out loud because there's a moment where as you're watching it, you actually go, wait, what? What? And you rewind it and you realize it's Ben Affleck is back.
Right.
Ben Affleck is back. You find out after the fact that he and Kevin Smith have reunited and it feels so good. It made everything that was clunky in the movie trailer somewhat better.
Right. And that's not the only Batman that's in this, which is hysterical.
Which other Batman is in this?
Val Kilmer.
Oh, yeah. Val Kilmer is in this, too. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
And apparently they have him only speaking with emojis.
I just, okay. I love that we're getting the same atmosphere and chemistry from the original movie.
It's the same. From what I understand, Kevin Smith took the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back script and just wrote it with reboot jokes.
Yeah. I mean, they opened the trailer on one of their old jokes.
Right,
but it was still great.
He's redoing the scene from you have Jay redoing the scene from Silence of the Lambs, and he's tucking it for whatever reason he's tucking it for. Like there's that like that moment right there. I'm like, okay, really? That's a little ham fisted. And then after that, I didn't give a shit.
When I was younger, I remember seeing that movie in theaters with one of my madres, and she's a little bit more reserved, and it was alarming.
That movie was great. That was his last great movie. Red State was good. That was his last great movie.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of things, but I did you guys happen to read the story in which he and Affleck reconnected?
Yeah, it was because he was doing an interview with a news outlet, and they actually said that, hey, Affleck said he'd do it. And he's like, yeah, right, that's just something you say to junk it. And then he started thinking about it, and then people started pressuring him to send the text, and he sent the text, and Affleck actually said, of course, you still akin yourself to being a king or something like that.
Right. It was all an excerpt from Conan. It was an excerpt from Conan. He sent him a quote from Conan, and Affleck returned the quote.
Which is beautiful. Whatever got those two back together.
Are you Conan?
Yeah. Conan.
Conan. Why do you say Conan? Never mind. Move along.
Why do you judge? Why
I just noticed. Like I was like, "What? Who is he talking about?"
Maybe I just put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Are you legitimately excited for the movie, though?
I'm legitimately excited for the Mew movie. I can't wait for it. It's something that I've been excited for, especially because it's kind of like his rebirth ever since his heart attack, and it's something he really felt like doing. There, he's playing with a lot of jokes that has been on the internet for years, like how Harlequin, his daughter, looks more like Jay than him. So they're playing with that joke in this too, which is interesting. And they're playing with a lot of like the whole idea of turning comic book movies that maybe don't need to be so dark and scary into more dark and scary things. So
I'm hoping for the best. It was one of those trailers where it had high points and low points.
It had nostalgia.
I saw a whole lot of moments where I'm like, that's Kevin Smith. Then I saw other moments where I'm like, oh, that's Kevin Smith. You know what I mean? And that's where I was at. So after it was over, Affleck saved it. That's what I would say.
I know it's going to be rough. And I know it's at the same time, it's going to be fun, I'm sure.
Are you sure, though?
I know I'm going to have fun.
Did you see Yoga Hosers?
I did, and I actually had fun with that, and you're not going to change my mind on it.
Whoa.
That's the wrong answer. This is how you hurt credibility for yourself. And I'm giving, you know, just pretend like you didn't say it. Just.
There's Yoga Hosers and Lady in the Water. I watch them both, and I enjoy them. Shut up.
Well, I think you proved that you're wrong. Okay, what's next?
Okay, up next we have the trailer for Picard. So it's been 17 years since we've seen Patrick Stewart in the uniform of Jean-Luc Picard. We have an interesting story, and what we have is basically he's putting together this team of people or crew to help this girl who is in one way, either A, she's connected to Data, or B, she's connected to the Borg or something in the middle. It looks really interesting, and it actually feels like a whole new look for that Next Generation storyline. As opposed to like how before it kind of felt like how iPhones feel, where they're all fakey and weird.
Okay.
So it feels more like a tangible world, more solid, more grounded. So what do you think? How did this hit you?
I don't like Star Trek, the Next Generation. I like the reboot, which apparently is not really Star Trek, is what people tell me, but I like them.
Right. I like them.
I wasn't a big fan of the Next Generation. Love the originals. Don't like the Next Generation. This looks really good, though. This almost felt like a little bit of Star Trek mixed with Firefly, mixed with Logan. And that, whatever that is a nice combination, and it got me interested. Not enough to get all access, no, but enough to make me steal someone else's password and watch it. One thing that I really got excited about was knowing that they're going to have, was it 7 of 9? Jerry Ryan's going to be there.
Jerry Ryan's going to be there.
Data's going to be there.
You have Data's going to be there, and as well as Jonathan Frakes has been confirmed to be coming back for this, and so is Troy, so Marina Sirtis.
Yeah, so all that stuff, even though I didn't really love the show, I did watch it, so I know who those people are, so I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah.
I was never a big Trekkie. What is their name? You can tell Trekkie. Trekkie? Okay. I was never a big Trekkie.
Trekkosaurus is what they call them.
I don't think that's accurate at all.
You should identify yourself to everyone who loves Star Trek. Be like, I'm a Trekkosaurus too! Just so you can fit in. They're going to love you. They'll love you.
They will throw me into a garbage can. So I've never really been interested. The only time is when Anton was in one of them, and I still have yet to watch that one, quite honestly. But this did make me a little bit interested, more so than usual, I suppose. But it's, again, something I'm going to have to go with Aaron, where I'm not going to pay for that. So if somebody wants to loan me their password, Aaron, if you find somebody's password.
Yeah, I'll just give it to you.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm going to need that.
Yeah, I'm not even going to tell them.
Cool. Like that.
I'll just be like, no, I'm still using it. Was that you? It says you're in Alaska. That's weird, right? I don't know.
I did some traveling.
Wait. Didn't we have a conversation like that this week?
Yeah, it's going to happen. I'm just letting you know.
It's going to happen. So one of the main writers actually did come out and say that this is not really a direct sequel to Next Generation, and so it's not going to have the same feel at all as Next Generation, where it's going to be more of a slower, more gentle, more lyrical story, and a lot more character based versus what Next Generation did.
Okay, everything about what you just said—that's what it looks like. I agree. I did also see that Star Trek Discovery for season 3 is going to leap 1,000 years into the future.
Weird.
Weird.
Yeah, which I don't watch that show either, but now I'm kind of interested. Plus, they had Anson Mount in season 2, and I love him. So
who?
Anson Mount.
Well, Anson Mount had to get a new job after, like, not Immortals, but the other Marvel property failed miserably.
Yeah, but on Hell on Wheels, he was great. Loved Hell on Wheels.
Oh, it was Immortals, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Immortals.
Yeah, where they're like, hey, why don't you just stare at the camera and somebody's going to talk for you.
Just smolder.
Right.
Do your best Jumanji.
Yeah. All right, so up next on my panel, actually, does anyone want to add anything to these? To this?
No, we're good.
No? All right, so up next, what I want to go for is the Russo Brothers. They had an amazing announcement to me, which they're doing a story, which is a 1980s comic called Grimjack, which is so deep cut that I had never even heard of it before. But more importantly, they're doing a Battle of the Planets movie. So for those who don't know, it's originally based off of a 1972 Japanese anime series called Science Ninja Team Gatchaman. That's a mouthful.
Okay.
The American version was called Battle of the Planets, and it follows a group of kids who are known as G-Force, and they protect Earth from the Spectra and other extraterrestrial foes. It's not currently... There's nothing really said as far as when they're coming out or when they're going to actually have it done, but hey, they announced that they have the property and they're working on it with their new production team.
I don't need it. But you sound excited. So if you sound excited, I figure this is right up your alley.
Well, it is right up my alley. I grew up watching these cartoons, and I really enjoyed the cartoon. And to be so much up my alley is like the characters are all based off of different birds. And okay. People don't know this about me, but I have a thing about birds. So
really?
What? Yeah, this is what...
Like a fetish?
Yeah.
Like you get turned on by them?
I mean,
when you
bit,
said people like, don't really, I think you meant nobody knows about your bird fetish.
I want to know more about your
bird fetish. By the way, I spent a lot of my life like studying books on falconry and birds of prey just as a hobby. So I always wanted to be able to do that sort of thing.
Wait, hold the fort monologue. Let me ask you a question, because I actually do have a full-length bird costume. If I were to wear said bird costume in one's presence, would that elicit any kind of reaction from you? Would there be any Watchmen effect, is what I'm asking.
Ew.
That's a payback.
Would you eggplant emoji?
Don't make it gross, man.
What kind of bird costume is it?
It's a full-length bird. It looks like I'm a Twitter man.
It's a Twitter costume.
It's a Twitter costume? Then no.
No, it's a bird.
Like, those birds suck.
It's not like actual Twitter. I don't run around saying angry things to people. You shall suck!
Well, no, I just mean that my thing for birds, it's specifically birds of prey. I like a lot.
So get a falcon costume and he's about it.
Like with Harley Quinn?
Oh, definitely with Harley Quinn.
That's the only birds of prey. Oh, you mean birds that attack. All right.
I really just kind of...
Raptors, as they're called.
Thought the thing you were going to bring up to Johnny was maybe you had a bird problem and you were going to ask for advice, and instead it went sexual and it went south real fast.
He said he has a fetish.
Have you met Aaron? I didn't say fetish. You guys said fetish. I just said I have a thing for birds.
Felt like you said fetish.
It felt like you wanted him to have a thing for a fetish of birds. A thing? A fetish for birds.
Yikes. I don't know what that means, but all right. Well, let's
all right, so moving right along, we have Grimjack.
That sounds sexual.
So again, I don't know anything about this property, so I did some little bit of research on this. So it was created by John Ostrander and Timothy Truman, and it follows John Gaunt. He's a sword for hire, a war veteran, and he and his crew are digging through their past as mercenaries when one of their teenage daughters show up and asking for help, and they're in a pan-dimensional city, whatever the hell that is. The adaptation was originally supposed to be done in 1996 by Babylon 5 creator Michael Straczynski, and he went on and did some other crazy stuff instead. Then the guy who made Defiance was supposed to do it, but now the Russos have it, and they're going to be working with Amazon. And to give you an idea of what this story is like, is it has arena combat, magic wielding, battles against hell, and complicated escape from heaven, plus clones, gator lizards, and sentient robots, and more.
Okay. All right. I don't know what the hell any of that meant, and that sounds weird as hell, so I think the Russos will make both of those things probably click.
But it's going to be like a live action, not animated thing for Grimjack, right?
I don't know. I don't think they said for sure on that one. Did they?
Yeah, they didn't say for sure on that one.
Okay, because if it's like some sort of a live action, like a real people thing, that would be interesting because it looks kind of cool in terms of what I've seen in the pictures.
But like Lion King real or real real?
Real real. Please don't give me that cut off, like knockoff shit. Anyway, that's all. Question over.
That's all? Okay. All right, moving on to my next thing I want to talk about is Dark Crystal. Age of Resistance is the prequel to the 1982 classic film, and it's going to honor the original by using 100% puppetry instead of any computer animation. And to give you an idea of what this story is going to be like, we return to Thra, where the three Gelflings discover the horrifying secret behind the Skeksis power, and they set out to ignite the fires of a rebellion to save their world.
Dark Crystal, I will definitely get behind, because that is a really cool concept. To bring something like that back that was such a novelty, and it really looks great. I really have a hard time not getting excited about that. That looks like it's going to be a fantastic show.
I have to be honest about the original Dark Crystal, is that I've watched that movie so many times, and I just recently watched it. I don't remember what it was about.
Puppets.
That's it. All right, Amanda?
Unlikely. But I can actually get behind this one of your panel. This one does seem a little bit more interesting, and I would be willing to give it a go.
Okay, cool. Like, the cast for this one is amazing. Taron Egerton, Anya Taylor-Joy, Mark Hamill, which his Skeksis seems to be the most interesting one. He's doing a Joker voice with it. But also, the way they built his Skeksis, he's got a TIE fighter in his eye with Darth Vader sitting in it.
I really like the colors.
That sounds fantastic.
The colors in it are like really beautiful, and I feel like the setting, the backdrop versus like the characters that they have, I think it looks really pretty. I know that's a weird thing to point, but like the artistry is really effective.
There you go. That's a much better way to say it than I think I look really pretty. I like baseball.
Well, but she's right. Jim Henson and his crew and his kids who are trying to live up to his vision are doing what seems like it'd be an amazing job. And I can't wait to see this story play out. I don't know if I'll be able to remember what happens, but I really can't wait to see the story play out.
All right. And last but not least.
Up last. So, hey, if I told you they were going to make the Golden Compass and make a TV show out of it, what would you
Hell
say?
Hell no, I'm out. That movie sucked.
Right. Well, surprise, surprise. I didn't realize this until I was reading up everything about this, but his Dark Materials is the Golden Compass.
What? Yeah, I knew that.
What? So his Dark Materials introduces us to Lyra, who's played by Daphne King. You'll remember her from Logan, she lives in a parallel universe where science, theology, and magic are all intertwined, and Lyra is on a search for a kidnapped friend and uncovers a mysterious plot involving stolen children. Very cool features to it. You've got another set of amazing casts. This is probably the one thing that'll make me want to keep my Game of Thrones channel subscription.
I was puzzled. This trailer blew me away because I wanted nothing to do with this show. Nothing to do with it. Because The Golden Compass was such a bad, I wouldn't say bad movie. It's more of a bland movie. Like, it wasn't even really a bad movie. It was just bland, and therefore made it hard to watch because you had so much talent and money into it. And it's just like, why is this so bleh?
Right.
And the book, which I have read one of the, I think I did read The Golden Compass. I think that's the one I did read. It was a long, long time ago. Is very much, it's kind of, the way I interpreted it is it felt very much like it was just coming down on people who are on religion itself, which I'm not really a fan of, because I'm a big fan of trying to understand why people believe what they believe. To my understanding, and based on what I've read in the interviews and whatnot, the intention of the show is not to do that, not to take on religion so much, as to attack blind faith, to attack the control aspect of it, of people that the idea that control can be twisted and kind of modified to fit whatever your purpose or your goal is. And that I can get behind. That's something that I think, you know, can pertain to life in general. So it's definitely something that has turned a corner, and the trailer itself looks fascinating. This feels like the closest people are going to get to a Game of Thrones right now, other than maybe The Witcher. So if you're really looking for something like that with a deep mythology and somewhere to go with an already established history that actually has been finished, that seems like the right way to go.
This seems like one of those shows that people make a podcast for.
Oh, yeah.
And it just looks really, really great in terms of the casting, the acting, visually it's really appealing because we're not stuck in this constant dark disarray where we're, I don't know, I just feel like sometimes when I watch shows like that, Game of Thrones is somewhat of an exception. It's too much for me and I get tapped out. But this one kind of tackled going back and forth between having a really bright, I don't know how to explain this very well, but just this really bright atmosphere versus this really dark atmosphere. And it, to me, that was just like the yin and yang on the screen really made it more appealing for me to want to watch, not to mention like the little animals and stuff.
Yeah, the demons seem like a really fun feature. The demons seem like a really fun feature. I really am interested to see how they play out. It's cool because the demons, if you don't know the story very well, they're essentially a representation of the character's inner soul. So, and as a character ages, the older, like the demon's a shapeshifter. And then by the time that the character hits puberty, that's when the demon settles on its final form, which you got like a character like Manuel Miranda's character. He's this badass pirate guy and he's got a fluffy bunny as his demon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice little juxtaposition of the character because it's supposed to be laid out in a way that whatever the character is doing or saying, you're supposed to be paying attention to the demon because the demon is the one who's going to tell you the hint of what's actually going on.
Well, they're cute, though.
Yeah.
And Daphne Keene's a great actress. So she was so good in
James
Logan.
McAvoy looked like awesome. I mean,
yeah, I don't even know if you mentioned McAvoy's in this. Yeah, he's in this too.
I didn't mention it, but it was brought up, and I can't, like, he's the thing that sells me the most.
Yeah,
on
absolutely.
And I don't think I even said this yet. All the trailers that we're talking about are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There's a link to it. There's also a link in the show notes. It'll take you right to it. So you don't have to go dig through YouTube. All the trailers are in one post. Just go there and scroll down and find the one you're looking for. I do want to say before we move on, if you do want to help us support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Pick your favorite tier. You get immediate access to whatever tier bonus content you choose. All right, now we go to my panel, and I'm starting with Snowpiercer, which, if you don't remember, is a fantastic movie starring Chris Evans that came out a while ago. But that's not what this is. This is a TV show. It's set more than 7 years after the world has become a frozen wasteland. Snowpiercer centers on the remnants of humanity who inhabit a gigantic, perpetually moving train that circles the globe. Class warfare, social injustice, and the politics of survival play out in this riveting television adaptation. Now it stars Jennifer Connelly, David Diggs, Allison Wright, Mickey Summer, Lena Hall, Stephen Ogg, and the showrunner is Graham Mason. This was an interesting movie. I really loved the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept of how you have different classes on each car of the train, and they're basically trying to keep the thing going because it goes around the world, because if it stops, the entire world is an ice palace. They would just die. So these are the last remnants of humanity. I don't know how you make a TV series out of it, but it reminds me a lot of The 100 in a way, but more of a bigger budget and a lot more mature.
And a lot less CW.
I was actually really impressed by the trailer, and then I saw that it's on TBS, and I
that like, was weird.
I thought TBS knows funny because it doesn't look funny, and I don't get that. But I'm glad that the show exists because it looks really impressive. It looks like top tier, a lot of money behind it. It looks like it's going to be a great show. Jennifer Connelly is an Oscar winner for crying out. Like, you've got a quality cast,
right?
And it's on TBS. So the only thing that really scares me about the show is the fact that it's on TBS. But I think season two is already a go. So we're getting a couple of it.
What?
Yeah. So the way I understood it is they already okayed season two. They already were that impressed.
When I was watching the trailer for this, I was like, since when does TBS do movies? And then I was like, oh my God, they're doing this as a show. And that's actually when I messaged Aaron and I was like, they're doing this as a show? So to me, it was just like it took me by surprise that they were going to try to put it into this formula.
Yeah, how do you get so many episodes?
I mean, the concept,
but I guess if you're going to live on a train for many years, I guess there's a way the show could work, right? You just tell those stories about class conflicts.
Right.
Yeah, and it looks like they're focusing on more than just the caboose section, I think it was, or whatever section it was that he was in.
Yeah, the polar like people. People doing all the work.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they're focusing on all the different cars of the train. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it's going to be a little bit more than just that. So I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That could be really cool. One big piece of news, not so much the panel or what we saw, but The Orville, which I'm a big fan of this show, Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek variation show, is leaving Fox because apparently he told them he couldn't have it ready for this fall. So it's leaving Fox. They actually let Hulu take it. So season three is actually going to air on Hulu exclusively in late 2020. So not this year, but late next year. I just thought that was a fascinating change. And Hulu is making some curious moves.
I feel like that makes sense, though, because Fox...
I only watch it on Hulu. True story.
I didn't know it wasn't on Hulu because that's the only place I've ever seen it on.
I'm with you. That's pretty much where I only ever watch it. And unfortunately, I haven't been keeping up with it. But yeah, it seems like an interesting move. And let's see what they do.
I don't know. You guys have both raved about it. And I've only seen probably like three episodes or something. It's something that I've wanted to watch. I just, first of all, was binging other shows. And now, I don't know. I feel like maybe I should give it a go.
It has enough Star Trek that I get why people like Star Trek. But it has enough comedy to make me forget that it's like Star Trek.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe I'll do that.
That's actually the perfect way to describe
Use that as your log line, guys.
Yeah. Did you know that Adrian Palicki and that redheaded ensign guy got married?
Scott Grimes?
Yeah.
Sure did. Did you also know?
I just found out a couple weeks ago, I think, when it happened. And you know what, man? I guess there really is like someone for everyone.
You did also hear that they just filed for divorce, right?
What?
Yeah. It already happened.
They only just got married.
It was like 2 months.
Who is this?
Adrian Palicki and Scott Grimes. You have to watch the show and you would know.
Okay.
But yeah, they already filed for divorce. So the magic is over. I'm sorry to tell you, maybe she didn't like that we were going to Hulu. I don't know. Maybe she got mad.
Oh my God. It's actually, wow, that poor guy.
Oh, that's his name. Yes. You ever just like have actors where you just know their face and you just never learn their name? Because
no,
they're always just that
never,
guy.
Never. I look it up. But you don't read articles, so we get where you're coming from.
Oh my God, I read articles.
All right, moving on. I could tell that by when you read the first line of the sentence. You're like, oh, Seth Rogen was in his Preacher panel.
Oh my God. Let me
The Witcher is next up. The Witcher. Based on the best-selling fantasy series of books, The Witcher is an epic tale of fate and family, centering on the character of monster hunter Geralt of Rivia. Rivia? Something like that.
I've heard
is it Riviera?
No, it's just Riviera. Okay. We'll be introduced to the world of the continent where humans, elves, witchers, gnomes, and monsters battle to survive and thrive, and where good and evil is not easily identified. Somebody wrote that, and it wasn't me. It stars Henry Cavill, Anya Chalatra, and Freya Allen, alongside showrunner Lauren Schmidt-Hissrich. This is one that people were losing their shmeal about and getting really, really excited. They've been waiting for a look at it. Henry Cavill. Is it Cavill or Cavill? Henry Cavill has been nothing but excited. He wanted this job. The showrunner actually passed on him the first audition and went through a bunch of other people and came back to him. So he had to earn this job. It wasn't just given to him because he's Superman or he used to be Superman or might be Superman or was whatever the hell that is. He had to earn it. And he has the look. It's very important to point out it's not based on the video games. It's based on the books. There's a mucho popular video game series that's obviously based on the books, but doesn't really follow the books, I guess. And it's not based on that. It's based on the books.
Right. So the video game is more of a hack and slash, whereas the books has an actual story to it. And that's why there's that distinction.
That makes more sense. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I just pissed off some video games guys. They're like, what are you talking about? There's a story to Witcher.
I guarantee you. Some gamer just listened just through their own phone across the room. That's not sensical.
I don't really give a crap what it's based on. It looks cool.
Does it? Were you guys won over by the trailer?
Yeah. I was real excited.
I had a hard time figuring out what it was. I had to go look at the description to understand what was going on.
Really?
Yeah.
It took me like...
There's some monsters that he's going to kill, but I don't get what the point of that is. He's just like, are you Van Helsing? Is that all you do? What else is going on?
He just looks super cool.
He does look super cool.
He looks like an intriguing character. Like he has some sort of like a mystery to him. And I was like, oh, I kind of really dig this. And then he was just like really, I don't know. To me, for whatever reason, I wasn't alarmed at the fact that there wasn't much story happening in the trailer. I was more just excited of like, this looks like a fun action-packed thing that I could potentially get myself into because I'm not familiar with the property.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. I didn't care that I wasn't getting too much of the story. It's going to be, what, an 8-episode, 12-episode show, so I'm going to eventually get the story, and I can't wait to see it. It seems like Game of Thrones did one thing for us, which is open up the world to the idea of might and magic for television, and this is going to take full advantage of that idea and give us something good, gritty, and yet still fantastical.
All right, well, we'll see what happens with The Witcher. It's coming soon on Netflix. Next up, the Terminator panel. Everybody's so excited about the Terminator panel. We learned very little news at this conference, except Edward Furlong will be present in Terminator Dark Fate, which is interesting, because I don't think he's been in anything in the last decade, so that'll be fun.
Does he even remember how to act?
Did they find him at the Home Depot? Like,
whoa!
We'll pick you up after your
shift. No, he's a barista at Starbucks. What are you talking about?
I feel bad for picking on poor Ed. All right, and Linda Hamilton had to be wooed back into the role, which was kind of interesting when you watch the panel. But apparently James Cameron, her ex-husband, ironically, being involved is really what worked her into it. Then, just when you thought everybody was really excited and they were feeling the love and people were pumped and Arnold Schwarzenegger's there and he's just soaking it in, Tom Cruise crashes their entire panel to deliver his trailer for Top Gun Maverick. And that's all anyone talked about. It's like they forgot that they were at a Terminator panel. Because Tom Cruise dropped his cruise missile right there, which ironically, there's so much nostalgia in that trailer. The entire internet exploded, much like a volleyball landing on a cruise missile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of nostalgia. Lots.
Wow.
What did you think about Top Gun Maverick?
I was throwing, what's that again? Eggplant emojis at it the whole time. Like, especially the in-cockpit look at the flight, like, that was beautiful. Like, seeing Maverick there, but then you can see the other jets in which he's in formation of.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. I don't really give a crap about the story of Top Gun. It's going to be Tom Cruise doing faces, sitting in a cockpit, not breaking his leg, and being a badass and riding on an old-school Ducati. Why not?
And they recreated the shot of him riding down the runway or whatever.
Right.
The whole trailer doesn't really give you much new. And does the brilliant masterstroke of hiding Miles Teller from the camera.
They probably did that intentionally.
They did it for me, because as soon as I saw him, I would have been out of this. So they did a really good job with that. And it really felt like, to me, this, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you didn't get anything new in this one. Well, I don't think this was intended. This was intended to get the people that already love Top Gun engaged with the concept of a new Top Gun, and the next trailer will really kind of open it up to what's the story about, if there's even a story, which I agree, I don't need one. Just show me these real planes. They're real jets that the actors were really in at the time.
To me, it's not really about the story. This felt very nostalgic. I'll watch it just because of that factor. It's still interesting to see him do all the crazy stuff that he does. So, I mean, I'll
watch it. Did you like Top Gun?
I thought it was all right.
All right. You hear that, John? All right.
I get the love for it.
I don't think you get it if you said all right. If you got it, you would get it.
Because if you felt the need.
Oh, no.
You'd know
exactly.
It.
Exactly. God.
Yikes.
It's the only movie I can watch where I get excited watching men play volleyball.
This is awkward.
It came out wrong. All right, we're going to move on to Westworld.
Please.
No, I think that came out exactly right. Actually, I think it came out exactly right. The Westworld, Season 3. Now, we finally got a solid look at Westworld Season 3 when the trailer was debuted and Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan let us in a little bit on the details for once. They're not playing as coy as they normally do, probably because they lost 30% of their audience in Season 2 because wow. They were trying too hard to make it.
That was me.
Yep, exactly. Well, they admitted that. They basically said this season will not be as complicated, and they were alluding to trying to trick the audience. I was concerned because it almost came across as, did you say dumb it down? I almost heard you say dumb it down. I hope that's not what you said, but it's going to be less cumbersome. It's going to be more straightforward. They said they're not going to be playing with time and whatnot. Maybe that'll entice you to finish Season 2, John. I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, the third season embarks in the wake of the last android host rebellion / jailbreak from the Wild West Park and into the outside world. In Neo Los Angeles, we meet new cast member Aaron Paul's Caleb, a construction worker who pals around with a lo-fi robot named George. A blue-collar dude with a complicated past, as Aaron Paul always has. He soon finds himself in a dramatic confrontation with the runaway robot, Dolores. And Caleb challenges Dolores' perception of humanity. And probably, science, bitch!
Oh.
There will be a War World park also explored this season, which is kind of fascinating. And please don't call it Nazi World, because I don't want to live in a world where I have to watch a show that has Nazi World. That just scares me a lot. We should say that Jonathan Nolan added, when we started, Westworld was a dystopia, and now, three seasons in, it's kind of a best-case scenario. The form of AI we have on the show is thoughtful. Murderous, but thoughtful. I think we're headed into the world of artificial stupidity.
Interesting. I like that.
And the cast members, Ed Harris is there, so he's going to be back. Tandy Newton, Aaron Paul, Tessa Thompson, Evan Rachel Wood, obviously, and Jeffrey Wright. They're all going to be back. Anthony Hopkins, I do not believe, will be back this season. But we didn't think he'd be back in season two, and then he just popped up. You know what I'm saying? So you never know.
Spoiler.
Finish the show. It's been almost 2 years. I'm not hearing that nonsense. What did you think? What did you think of the Westworld season three trailer?
I loved it. I'm super excited. I haven't felt like regenerated and like interested, motivated to watch Westworld through all of the seasons, even the first season. Like, this one just really gets me pumped. And part of, I will admit that a huge part of that is that it's Aaron Paul. So I knew I was going to be much more interested in where the story was going to go. I knew it was going to add a level of drama and a level of intensity and brooding backstory. And I care about all of that stuff because I don't care that that's what his type is as an actor. That's what it is, and it works, and I like it. So I'm interested to see that happen here. But I like that the world is evolving for Westworld, that it's not staying. It feels a lot less Western to me, which I kind of need, because it was hard to deal with that. I'm not a Western type of girl. You know, I get enough of that through, like, Clint Eastwood and Quentin Tarantino. So for me, it was nice to see that they're switching things up a little bit.
Well, Los Angeles is in the West, so it counts.
Ah, it's different.
No, that's actually what they said.
It's different. Oh, really?
Yeah, that was actually the argument. Hey, well, LA is in the West.
Yikes. I'll take it.
John, is there anything here that would get you back on board?
I'm going to wait to see one more trailer to see if it strikes my interest or not. We've talked about it a lot. There's a lot of great TV out there, and I don't know if I need Westworld. But if the next trailer that comes out sparks some interest, then I'll give it a shot.
All right. Well, I obviously am on board because I have a whole podcast devoted to Westworld called Beyond Westworld, which I should point out has now joined the Hollywood Outsider Network. So it's
stop quoting it like that. It is a network.
I don't like saying that. It's like it's part of the Hollywood Outsider now. It's no longer part of Golden Sparrow Media. No hard feelings or anything. Just moved.
I mean, you may as well own the property.
Kind of like the Orville. We didn't know if it was going to work out, so we just moved it over to Hulu. We're Hulu.
We're Hulu now?
Are you saying we're Disney?
We wish we were Hulu right now.
We're taking Hulu. All the money?
I wish we had the money that they have. Last thing that I want to talk about for my panel, and it's a brief mention. So I don't even watch Walking Dead anymore. And Rick Grimes, once Rick Grimes left, I really didn't have a need. I just lost it. I mean, I'll probably come back to it at some point on Netflix or something. I'll catch up at some point. Just because you invest 10 years, you want to know what the hell is going on. But Rick Grimes left, Andrew Lincoln left, and he was going to go do movies for AMC. And they were originally going to air on the AMC network. But what we have come to find out based on Comic-Con is they made an announcement that his further adventures will be exclusive to theaters. It'll be a theatrical release. It'll be Walking Dead, the movie. It'll be presented and distributed by Universal Pictures. So we are getting a Walking Dead movie with Rick Grimes starring, or Andrew Lincoln starring as Rick Grimes. Not Scott Grimes. He's getting divorced. Different guy.
Poor guy.
Why do you keep bringing up his divorce? This is a touchy subject.
I don't
subject.
Know, man. That's what happens when you ruin Critters. I don't know what to tell you.
Again, poor guy.
Actually, I like Critters a lot. I like Scott Grimes a lot.
It doesn't seem like it. I'm not feeling the love.
Probably her fault. There. That's for him.
Better.
That's one for him. That's a point for him. That's a point for him. But what do you guys think about this? I mean, for all the people that have kind of lost touch with Walking Dead, to me, I feel like this should have happened in season 5 or something. Season 10 feels like way late.
Yeah, it's a little late. And I find it hard to be interested in anything Walking Dead. And somebody in my house tried to watch Walking Dead for a couple of days after pretty much to the point where we left off and just couldn't see it. Just couldn't do it.
I just, at this point, I don't really know that it's necessary. If they would have maybe announced this when he actually left the show, that even would have been a little bit better. But I agree that this should have been something that was done years ago. To me, it just feels like they're trying to save face and they're trying to continue this franchise that I guess I have very little room to actually talk about this because I've really only followed the big episodes and the spoilers. But it just seems like this is something that's dead. Like, let it go. People, fans seem to be over it.
It's not dead. It's still, here's the thing. Walking Dead was so big, it's lost half its audience. It's still, I think, the number one show on basic cable.
Yeah, but what's left on basic
cable? No, there's still a lot of big shows on. It's still the number one show on basic cable. It's a huge show. It is a juggernaut. They're launching a third spinoff, or I guess it would be a second spinoff. The original one spinoff, two spinoff. So a second spinoff. And then they're going to have this Walking Dead movie. They're just trying to branch out into theatrical. Now, I do think like 5 years ago, this would have been fantastic. I would have been gunning for this. Walking Dead, the movie, they can get, well, not that they're not bloody enough on the show, but they could get real foul and R-rated and they could just go for it. I love the idea. I just, man, it just feels like it's a little late. But I'll still probably go see it.
They should have done something like this when they first started Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, that would have been a perfect time. That's right when it was at the height of its popularity. I agree. And written by Frank Darabont, if he could get over his lawsuit. All right, guys, that's it for our take on Comic-Con. We didn't touch any of the Arrow shows because John said he doesn't watch them anymore. So, sorry. I don't know what to tell you. Riverdale?
Yeah, I'm sure they're great shows still. I only watch them over the summer, and I don't really feel 100% interested in keeping up with them that much anymore. It's just, yeah.
Can I ask you one question in parting before we go? You specifically, John. All right. Supernatural is having its 15th year. They had their final panel this year. I assume it's their final. Maybe they'll have one next year. But it's their final preseason panel. They've been there for every year. And I went there at Comic-Con, and actually, because I was trying to get in the Sons of Anarchy panel, ended up sitting through their panel so I could see Sons of Anarchy. They had a fantastic, like, they have, even though I don't even watch the show, they have a connection with the fans that I find pretty amazing. Yeah. And you're a huge fan of this show. Are you in mourning about this at all, or you feel pretty good that this is the final season?
I'm feeling really good that this is the final season. I want to be able to say that they're going to finish on their terms and they're finishing on top. I don't know if I can own that very well because it is 15 seasons and they have had lulls in the seasons where it's ebbed and flow as far as what the story's gone. This seems like the perfect way to end it. Now, before it gets to a point where like they're struggling for ratings or people hate the show or they make fun of the show or it's more of a joke of itself, they're back on top and now it's time for them to end it.
All right. That's all I want to know. I don't watch it, so I have no idea. I probably will watch that final episode because I love those guys so much. Jared Padalecki, yeah. I think, is just hysterical.
He does a lot of good stuff.
You're wrong. Jared Padalecki is funny on stage, but on the show, it's Jensen Ackles that has all
that's who I meant. So obviously, I don't watch the show enough that I can't even keep them straight. Jensen Ackles is really funny on the stage. Sorry.
Well, they're both really funny on stage. They both have a lot of fun on stage. The characters, on the other hand, the one that has the most fun is definitely.
I'm not attacking any of your guys. All right.
Yes, you are. You monster. I heard you.
Both funny. You can comment on this episode if you have to, or correct Amanda on her reading skills.
Oh my God.
And our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Our email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Subscribe in whatever preferred podcast app you use. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws. That's at rjohn.draws. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows, and me and my other podcast, Smirk, and Presenting Hitchcock.
And Beyond Westworld.
And Beyond Westworld, if you want to catch up for season, you know, get ready for season 3. And that's it. Remember, the next time you head to the theater to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is my most anticipated movie of the year, and it's coming out, we'll be talking about that next week. Buy popcorn.
That was the longest editing ever.
Shut up. That movie should be amazing. 10 out of 10. I'm going to pull a Justin McCumber. 10 out of 10.